Factor celebrity has been crowned. Former TOWIE star 27-year-old Megan McKenna beat off competition from professional quizzer Jenny Ryan and identical twins Max and Harvey. That's the latest. I'm Anna Bates.
Gadio Weekend with Do It London.
New HIV diagnosis are down 40%.
Visit doitlondon.org.
Gadio. Welcome to Open Forum, a programme brought to you by Gadio, Reform Radio, and very kindly funded by Audio Content Fund. I'm Dean McCulloch. Welcome along to the show. Open Forum brings together a melting pot of artists, experts, and those just ready to have a good old chinwag about various topics that matter to you. The first in our series was identity. If you missed that episode, you can catch that again on our website. It's gadio.co.uk. But today, we're going to talk about sex, baby. Welcome, my live studio audience. Yes, for the next hour, we are going to be talking about the all-important subject of sex. You're going to have artists in your ears, music, we've got poems, and we've got topics that will definitely get your blood racing. If you're likely to be offended by discussions of more of an adult nature, then come back in an hour and it'll be business as usual. Okay, in the words of Salt and Pepper, let's talk about sex, baby. Give us a big round of applause again, guys. Right, let's get straight into it then. So throwing this right out to our open forum, is sex an easy topic to talk about? And was it okay to talk about sex when you were growing up? If not, why?
Hello, my name's Lena. And sex wasn't an easy topic to talk about growing up. Still isn't. Growing up, I thought even the word was like forbidden. So I used to spell it out.
Oh, did anybody else do that? Nod if you did that. There's lots of nodding happening in the room. SEX. Yeah. When you go and have SEX with her, remember?
Yeah.
But that was kissing when you were younger, wasn't it? Sex was this like taboo subject when you were
growing
up. Was it the same for you?
Yeah, it was really bad because just personally, I'm still a virgin and I haven't had sex.
She can't even say it now.
I haven't had it, so yeah, it's still uncomfortable.
And being a virgin, are you proud to be a virgin?
I don't know. I never really thought about it that much. Like, I'm not proud, but I'm not, like, ashamed.
Okay, and where did you learn about sex then? Is it something you learned going in school, at home, through friends?
I think it was something that I learned through friends, and then we were taught about it in school, but never through my parents. Like, my parents haven't even talked to me about it still.
Okay. Does that resonate with anybody else in the room? Show of hands if you're in the same boat.
Hi, my name is Ben. I definitely agree with you about the idea of not being able to talk about sex, but mostly just out of pure awkwardness, because I think when I was younger, it's more because I didn't really know much about it, because we didn't really get taught about that in school. I went to a Catholic school all my life, so it wasn't really on the curriculum. And now it's more so just pure like awkwardness. Even if I'm watching TV, like say if I was watching like Modern Family, they won't have anything explicit on it. But if they ever hint at sex on the show, I kind of want the ground to swallow me up because it feels so uncomfortably awkward.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw two men kissing on Corey, and I must have been about 9, but I just wanted to like die into the sofa. Do you remember that episode when Todd and Thingy kissed for the first time? It was the first time I'd ever seen men kissing on the TV, and I was like, please make it stop. Anybody else want to add to that?
Hi, my name's Wanda, and it was difficult to talk about sex when I was younger. I wasn't allowed to. In my household, we grew up with my mum and dad are both pastors, so they're very religious Christians, and sex was only allowed when you're married. So if you're not married, you shouldn't even be thinking about it, talking about, like, you don't have a sex conversation with your mum and dad. It doesn't happen until the first time she had it with my sister is when she got married. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird
one. Do you find now that because of that upbringing and because of the way that you're brought up that you have gone completely the other way, are you really intrigued about sex?
I was always like a bit intrigued, and maybe it's because of my past. I don't mind telling people I'm strong. So I feel like I'm powerful at the moment. So I was abused when I was young. So I feel like that sexualized me from a young age. So I was always, so then to not talk about it and say, it's not something you can do until you're older, then that's already happened. Do you know what I mean? So it was just very weird and confusing for me, but yeah.
So do you have a negativity attached to sex at the moment?
Nah, I love sex.
Do you?
Like, yeah.
Who loves sex in this room? Put your hand up. Okay. And who actually doesn't like sex? Put your hand up if you think, oh, I'd rather not. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A bit of a mixed bag in the room today. Who then had good sex education growing up? Who had a good brother or sister, a good mum or dad, a good support network that sat them down and said, right, these are the birds and the bees, and this is what happens. Tell me.
Yeah. Hi. My name's Deegs, and my mom gave me the sex talk, and oh my gosh, just hearing her say the word willy, geez, still have nightmares, eh?
Anybody else? Yes?
Hello, yeah, I'm Jack. And the sex education that was in my school was quite outstanding. I mean, they taught us everything that we should know, like same-sex marriage and stuff like that. And there were even moments where they said, if you do have any questions but feel uncomfortable to talk about them in front of the class, put a question down on a piece of paper and put it in a box. Wow. And it's... And the teacher would read them out, but not read your name out. Oh, wow.
That's so really progressive, actually. I'm really quite impressed by that. Well done. Yes.
So I thought, that was brilliant. That's a brilliant idea.
It sounds really good. Thanks for sharing that. More and more young people today are exposed to sex via phones from an early age, with a staggering 53% of 11 to 16-year-olds have seen explicit material online, nearly all of whom, that's 94%, had seen it by the age of 14. The Middlesex University study says the research commissioned by the NSPCC and the Children's Commissioner of England said that many teenagers were at risk of becoming desensitised to porn. Why is there an issue with young people being desensitised to porn? Anyone else?
Hi, my name's Louis. I remember actually discovering porn for my PS3. I was with my...
What?
Listen, okay, so... I was with my mate one day. I went over to his house. He was like, oh, look at this thing I found online. And he typed in Pornhub, and that was like the beginning of it all. So I'd always known about sex, but it was like the first time I'd seen it so explicitly. I think, like what Wanda said, it really sexualized me in an early age.
How old were you?
I was 11.
Okay, and when you saw that porn for the first time, were you eager to see more?
I think it was more... like intrigued, like a weird sort of curiosity. I mean, it was straight porn and I'm not a straight guy, so it didn't interest me that much, but it kind of got the gears turning in my head about, oh, what's this? I want to know more. I want to find out more about it.
So, you know, the study says 94% of young people have seen it by the age of 14. Imagine you were a parent, if you had kids and they were, you know, you dropped them off at school and they were all sitting around their friend's iPhone watching porn. How would you feel?
For myself, I think porn is not the best representation of sex. So there's other ways of teaching them about sex without exposing them to porn. Porn belittles women in a way, and yeah, it's not the best representation of how you treat people in when you actually are. It's not reality, really. So if you want to teach them about the realities of sex, don't show them like
actors. Or is it reality? We're very lucky today to be joined by our resident sexpert today, ladies and gents. I'd like to introduce you now to Tim. Tim, can we call you Tim? How would you like us to call you?
You can call me Kobe.
Okay, so this is Kobe Lewis. By the way, if you've just tuned in, you are listening to Gaydio, and this is Open Forum. We are talking about sex today. If you're likely to be offended by discussions of an adult nature, you might want to come back in a bit. Kobe, you are a professional sex person.
I am an international award-winning professional, darling.
There we go. Give that a round of applause. So Kobe, you are a porn star.
I am.
And with regards to what we've been talking about, you know, young people seeing sex, how would you feel if a young boy at the age of 11 or 12 was watching you getting your kid off?
Get your child off its phone and get it banned until it's legal. Yeah. There are laws in place for a reason.
Obviously, the things that you do within porn, the situations that you find yourself in, do you ever find yourself on set, even in your job, think this is a bit too aggressive, you're taking this a little bit too far?
Yes, and just like... in your own personal lives, whether you're being paid for it or not, if you're being paid for it, bargain. If not, you have the right to say no at any point. You've hooked up with someone and you're drunk, you want to say no, you say no.
It's interesting. It is interesting talking to you today, and you did mention being paid there. Have you ever been paid for sex?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
My rule when I started porn was if I wouldn't do it for free, I wouldn't do it for money.
Okay, so back to Open Forum then. Can watching porn too early negatively on the first time we have sex Can it impact that? So when you watch porn for the first time and the first time you have sex, can that set things up to be a bit more negative? Can the bar be a little bit too high? And you think, gosh, I have to, in my first time, be like how I saw it when I watched porn.
I really think it does because I really think watching porn early on and then having sex, it makes the first time not that special because you come in with all these expectations and this unrealistic standard that you set up for yourself and it just doesn't really add up. And then you start, and then you could possibly think, have I done something wrong? Am I not good at it? And then, you know, all the little insecurities come in. It can make the first time not as special as it should be.
Whilst I agree with that, I think there's the opportunity, not that I'm condoning watching porn young, but I think it can allow people to accept certain sexual interests that they might have. So they may feel more comfortable asking for that in a relationship when they get there.
Thank you, Dan. Talking of our first time, we have the wonderful Nathaniel Hall with us here today. Can we please give him a huge welcome, first of all? Nathaniel is an award-winning theatre maker and HIV activist from Manchester. He writes, directs, inspires and produces bold and socially minded work. Nathaniel is the writer and performer of First Time, the one-man show about staying positive in a negative world. Nathaniel, thank you so much for being here today. So you're going to perform a piece for us now. Can you tell us a little bit more about the piece and where it came from?
Yeah, so this little poem that I'm going to perform actually was kind of the poem that inspired the show First Time. I'm not going to reveal too much, but it's about kind of the awkwardness of sex and then also maybe the awkwardness of some of the fallout of sex. Potentially, if you get an STI, then you have to then have that treated, and kind of my experiences growing up and kind of going through those experiences.
Okay, well, we'll listen to the poem. This is an exclusive poem within the play that was taken out, wasn't it?
It was. It's on the cutting room floor, so it's no longer in the play because the play needed to be shortened, so you're getting an exclusive of a poem that is no longer in it.
All right, lovely. Take it away, Nathaniel.
My first time was actually with Sue. Don't laugh. I'm serious. The place where it happened felt clinical. Sue came across a bit cynical, like she'd seen my type before. It was painful that first time. I remember it blindsided me in a way I didn't expect, and up the tears crept as Sue entered abruptly, touched me on the hand, then the face. I'd expected an embrace my first time, but this one kept it purely professional. Listened to my confessional and then offered me a tissue to clean up the mess I'd just made on her desk. Never did see her again. All I have left is the memory when I had that first time with Sue. My second time was with Carol, who dressed in fancy apparel, which made it a little bit more relaxing for a second time with Carol. The door this time was closed, much better for a supposed intimate exchange of details, with a little red light above it as if to say, stop, don't enter this way. Well, it all felt a little bit naughty. Like we were up to something saucy. Well, I remember she did have rather large fingers that could bring us to a quick and satisfactory conclusion. Not one for romance or illusion was our Carol. Maybe a brief chat about the weather or the bus. Never one to fuss. But I liked her cardigan with a chunky knit and her boisterous northern charm and wit. It helped to ground me on my second time with Carol. My third time was with Karen in a room so utterly barren that I started to get depressed on my third time with Karen. Now, Karen was married to Darren. A fact she mentioned every time I entered her barren patch. If I had a dime for every time, I'd be rich. Well, in America at least. Now, Karen was my least favourite, and not because she was unfriendly, but well, she liked to talk and keep things light, and it often felt like she might turn it into something more meaningful and special. But in the end, it was always a disappointment in the room that was ever so barren, talking to the woman married to Darren on my third time with Karen. My fourth time was with Andy. Now, Andy was a little bit randy in a way that was utterly inappropriate for a fourth time with Andy. Andy had cottoned on. I was a bit of an old-timer in this place. He could sense I'd graced the presence of many before him and so would sit right on the rim and lean really close in and offer all the usual, but in a tone that suggested he wanted a little bit more. Condoms for you today. a leaflet off the carousel about which positions make it more comfortable, perhaps. Whoa, no thanks, Andy, mate. You've collapsed the whole illusion of the conjugal collusion I've created here in my mind. Only I'm allowed to make wild assimilations of words and smut. Tut, tut, Andy. Tut, tut. To be honest, it was all rather unprofessional in the place of the confessional was my fourth time with Andy. My fifth time was with Janet. Damn it, Janet! Was from another planet, and not one in this galaxy either, such as my fifth time with Janet. I know, of course, was well versed in this exchange. Nothing could embarrass or upset, but we mustn't forget that other planet Janet was new and crap. My times with Janet were bumbling, fumbling, prepubescent encounters full of misunderstandings, double bookings, unanswered phone calls, and constant lookings for this and for that. I feared greatly for anyone who had the unfortunate to do with Janet as their first time. In the end, my patience was lost, and I snapped wildly at her boss, which ended my fifth time with Janet. My sixth time? I can't remember. Well, let's face facts, it does get less special each time. You see, my entire adult life has been spattered with well-meaning folk who go home at the end of the day shattered, from first-time encounters and fat fingers that move fast, from telling the same story and trying to sound aghast on the punchline, from being thrown in at the deep end in cost-cutting exercises designed to make services go that little bit slicker. And I'm sad that I've forgotten their real names and their faces, that I've reduced them to stock characters without airs or without graces or without the detail that each human being deserves, simply for saying warmly, come in, have a seat, love. No need to be concerned. 6 months again, then, pet. Them CD4s will be in the 500s, then, I'll bet. And whilst for them it's just a job, they never forget that for you each visit is plagued with regret and remorse, and with guilt, and with anger. Which all fades away when first time Sue comes out with a clangor. Sorry about your weight, love, just went arse over tit in the lube cupboard. And you smile, and you sigh, even through tears. Looking back through the years, the impact she'd have, you never even knew when you had that first time. That first time with Sue.
And of course, that is an excerpt from your play First Time, which we'll talk more about how you can see the full thing in a bit. Nathaniel, I feel like I've been on a real journey through that piece. I don't know about you. What made you go and get tested the first time?
Oh gosh, it's a long time ago now. So yeah, so I'm nearly 33. So I was diagnosed with HIV when I was 2 weeks before my 17th birthday. So I was still 16. I got sick on holiday. I was on my last holiday with my parents and my little sister. But as you kind of think, like, you're on holiday, it's like a waterborne virus. I even came home and went to the GP and they said the same thing. But that kind of sort of passed and I got a little bit better. And then I started college in that autumn and I started to get other symptoms down below. So,
and that was the first time that you had sex, you caught HIV. Yeah. And how did that make you feel?
For me, there was a lot of shame attached to that diagnosis, and a lot I've had to unpick in the last 2 years about that kind of traumatic event that happened.
And of course, you know, like lots of queer people, you've got to come out all the time in taxis and barbers and all that sort of stuff. But actually, you have to come out every time you have sex.
Yeah, so I mean, it's still, every time I go to the clinic, they do say, they remind you, you know, do you tell your partners? You are legally, you don't have to, but the law is that if you don't and then you pass on HIV, then you could get into a lot of trouble for that. Fortunately now, if you're on effective medication, all the science has shown that you can't pass on the virus. So I'm undetectable. And that means that I can't pass on the virus to any of my sexual partners, which is amazing.
Yeah, and definitely moved on. You must have seen a massive change in clinics and testing in the last 15 years. Open forum then. What's it like visiting a clinic? Yes.
So I went to a clinic when I was 18 after I had my first time. And it's a bit weird going in there because I was the only guy in there. Everyone else in there was like a teenage girl with like a big belly. So it was a bit weird being in there asking for like a HIV test. And the actual test itself is quite weird to do. I won't go into details, but it's a bit it's not something you really want to spend your time doing.
You mean the swabs?
Yeah, the swabs. And then it's quite nerve-wracking waiting for the text to get your results. You have to go back to get vaccinations for different things. But it is quite a weird place to be. It's quite, feels unnatural because you're not in like a normal doctor's, so you can't sort of sit there, read the, look at the magazine like it's normal. It's quite unnerving.
Anyone else? Anyone else? Anyone else? Yes. Kobe.
Before I answer your question, I just want to add on to what Nathaniel said about the medication, about not transferring. If anyone listening is interested, search for a person called Jason Domino and the group Porn for Prep. That will give you a lot of information about the drug and how it helps not pass on to other people.
U equals U is one of the best factors that we've got now, and the best contraception that we've got in the country. We're very lucky. Yes.
Clinic. About visiting the clinics.
That's right.
With what I do, as you can imagine, I'm on a first name basis with all of the nurses at the hospital. I would suggest for every single person to be very confident about everything to do with your sexual health, especially if you're having unprotected sex. You should be getting checked very regularly, just for your own benefit, if not alone, let alone your sexual partners.
Okay, anyone else in the room then? Let's talk more about clinics. Any females in the room that fancy chipping in about clinics?
Yeah, so my first time at the clinic was horrendous, really. The nurse couldn't find my cervix for some reason. I know, you think it would be in there, right? You know?
To be fair, I'd have trouble too.
And so anyway, so she was like, sorry, hon, I just need to go get my colleague. So I had two women down there, which I would usually like, but not in this case. And they were shoving all sorts of things in there. And then they found it, thank goodness. And it turns out that it was just like a strange angle, because contraception, the pill, which I was on at the time, can alter the development of it for some reason, something to note. And then the next time at the clinic wasn't any better, because the lady asked, so are you sexually active? And I was like, yes, at the time. And she's like, are you using any contraception? And I was like, no. She's like, okay, do you have your IUD? And I'm like, no. Condoms? No. And she was very concerned. And she was like, do you know it's dangerous? I'm like, no, I'm gay. Like, I've got a girlfriend. And she's, and then she started laughing, which was very uncomfortable. Don't know why she was giggling. Anyway, and then she was like, you know, you could still get STDs even if you're in a same-sex relationship, which was noteworthy, and I think that's important to say that as well.
Has anybody else here in the room lied in the clinic when they ask you the all-important question, how many sexual partners have you had? Does anybody round down like me?
I think when they asked that question about how many sexual partners you had, I think I used to have a lot of shame attached to sex, and that obviously is linked to my story and kind of becoming HIV positive so young. And now I've worked through all that sort of stuff. I'm like, you know, if it's been, you know, if it's a big number, I'm like saying it with pride. Recently it's zero. I'll tell you that. I've just come out of a long term relationship, so I'm licking my wounds, and then I'll get back out there. So maybe next time I go to the clinic, it will be a nice big number.
It's been three and I'm proud.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's important to tell the truth about how many sexual partners that you've had?
So I'm Kate, and I think, well, for me, I've always been able to say it was just one. Like, I've had a boyfriend since I was 17, I'm now like 21. It's been very simple for me. So I think when you get there and you haven't always been with the same partner. So yeah, I think it's really important to be honest, because these people are there to help you. I think it's very, very daunting going and speaking to a stranger, and it's such a personal question to ask, and they're like, how many people have you like slept with? And it's like, that is a question for me. Like, I don't want to discuss that with you. But they are there to help you in the end, and that's the only thing that they want to do.
Yep, exactly. You know, it's a very good point. Yes. We're going to hear from Dan now. Dan Cooper is our resident senior psychological therapist. Hello, Dan. Welcome back to Open Forum. Dan, we have a few things to cover here, don't we, when it comes to sexual health? It's such a minefield, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I wanted to say there, picking up on Nathaniel's point about shame, I guess the setting of the sexual health clinic really does nothing to alleviate that shame, you know. Right. It's so clinical, and I appreciate it has to be done in a hospital setting, but I think there are things they could do to make it more welcoming or nurturing. And obviously there's a chance that you emerge from there knowing you've got an infection. So no, the experience of that really does nothing to kind of help with shame, and shame is often such a factor in people's lives when it comes to sex, but especially, you know, in sexual minorities and people living with HIV. So yeah, it is a shame that is the way it's set up at the moment.
So Dan, going back again to Nathaniel's point, if there's anybody listening here today that, you know, if they've went out this weekend, they've been partying, they've had sex and they're afraid to go and get tested because they've put themselves at risk, what would your advice be to them?
I guess it's always a personal choice as to whether or not somebody goes to get tested. And we do have to respect that, you know. If I was in the therapy room and I had a client there, by all means, I would not be pushing them or prodding them to go and get tested. But at the same time, I would deliver the facts, which are, if they are continuing to do that, they are putting others at risk. And the fact is, the longer they go on not knowing their status, if they were positive, they're putting themselves at risk as well. So the facts kind of speak for themselves, but it is a personal decision, and there's obvious anxiety around going for that test. But it's important to say that whether you go for the test or not, that doesn't change your status.
And of course, if you're listening today and you need some help, maybe you're newly diagnosed, maybe you know somebody who's been newly diagnosed, there is help out there. We'd highly recommend you to get in touch with our friends at the LGBT Foundation. Nathaniel, you've steered so much conversation in this room today. Tell us about your play quickly then. First time, how can we go and see it?
Yeah, so First Time has just done a run at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this summer, where we won an award. Woo! And from January onwards, it's doing a national tour and then another national tour in the autumn. So there's going to be absolutely loads of opportunity. And the best place to find it is to follow me on social media at Nathaniel J. Hall.
Give it up for Nathaniel, everybody. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Open Forum here on Gaydio, the beat of Gay UK. Hope you're having a lovely day, whatever you're up to. We're talking about sex today. We all have it. Well, most of us do. If you are likely to be offended by any of the discussions that you might hear in and around the subject of sex, it will be of an adult nature, and you've got any little ones around, you might need to come back after Open Forum has finished. I'm Dean McCulloch. Thank you for your company today. It's great to have you with us. Now, so far we've covered a lot of different things, including HIV diagnosis. We've been speaking about clinics and what sex means to you, how you learn about sex, and we're going to now get on to the subject of consent and everything that encompasses. So stick around. Now next up, I want to introduce you to somebody very special. You've already heard from her here today at Open Forum, and she's going to perform for us now. Her name is Wanda. She's a rapper, songwriter and vocalist. Hi Wanda.
Hey, okay.
Good, thank you. Welcome to Open Forum. Have you had fun so far?
I've had lots of fun talking about sex so far. I love sex, so yeah.
You do love sex, don't you?
I know, yes. Yes, I do. So it's a good topic of mine, yeah.
Yeah, why do you love sex so much?
It makes me feel good. And as you were saying before, it's all connected to my spirituality. Anything that makes you feel, I believe anything that makes you feel good is good for your soul. It's good for your spirit, and raises your vibrations. And I believe sex raises my vibrations, which means I then get more good things into my life. So sex is a gateway for good things.
If you want to catch her on Instagram, you can, of course. It's at Wanda, which is spelled O-N-E-D-A. Check this lady out. Wanda, take it away.
Yeah, man. It's Wanda. It's money on the rise. This song is called Own Her. I be all you need, baby. Yeah. She want me to be your owner, but I don't wanna own ya. I just wanna hit it from the back and turn you over. I just wanna finish on the bed, move to the sofa. I'm never this dirty when I'm sober. I'll be ever ready, baby ready steady. When we getting going, best be switching off the telly. I don't want no noise though, I don't want no screaming. Lay back with my eyes closed, sexually healing. Your body I'm feeling, my body you're feeling. Take your clothes off, I get you settled for the evening. MC Wonders, what they call me. I hit it from 7, gave up around 3. Jumped in the shower, put on my 90s. I mean my Nikes. Then I just bounced straight out the house. See, I ain't staying over. I could though for a bit, then I'm out. She be all I need, you be all I need. Baby, satisfy me. I'll be all you need, baby. I'll be all you need, you be all I need. Baby, satisfy me. I'll be all you need, yeah. Yeah, girl, you tell my grey skies blue, turquoise, indigo. Have my heart pumping, head banging like an indie show. Whenever you come, I show you love, so you never go. Whenever you leave, I'm on pause like them double lines. I know, no, you never lie, soldier. But I can see the civilian in your eyes, so I know you're soft still. Have me lay in bed all day like I'm off ill. And I know you never give me ish. No need for nappy bags. I know more rainy days. I've dashed my anorak. Cause others chat, they chirp. You think them girls have nerves, but I don't feel them. But you're vexed cause they want your girl. But don't worry, honey, I'ma keep you sweet. Call me your sugar mummy. 3 teaspoons after you're rubbing on me. Legs draped around your neck, I'm your sugar dummy. Want a lick of a lollipop, I guess you extra. You be all I need, she be all I need. Baby, satisfy me. I'll be all you need, baby. I'll be all you need, she be all I need. Baby, satisfy me. I'll be all you need, baby.
It's not part of the song, but I thought it would go.
Give it up for Wanda, everyone! Wow, a standing ovation here in the studio today. Wow, wasn't that awesome? So the song's called Owner. It's a play on words there. Tell
us
about that.
Yeah, it's Own Her. So yeah, basically the song is just, the song has been stripped down a little bit because it was a lot more sort of graphic than that, but I wasn't allowed to be so graphic, so I have stripped it down a little bit. But it's just about it's just about my play on sex. Like as I said, I love sex. I get spiritual healing through sex.
Do you need healing? It's not often you hear people say that.
Yeah, but you need, I believe I do need healing though. I need healing in a way where I can exchange the word for soothing and or healing, like where it soothes my spirit, soothes my mind, but at the same time it lifts me up. I believe sex puts me on a very high vibration.
Does anybody else in the room, show of hands, does anybody else feel that when they're having sex, a high vibration? We've got 1, 2, 3 hands in the room. Interesting. Okay. One of your lyrics is very well written, by the way. I'm really, really impressed. It was such a good track. One of the lyrics in the track was, I'm never this dirty when I'm sober. Powerful words there. Out to the open forum then. Can being under the influence impact our decisions when it comes to sex?
Hi, I'm Charlotte, and I think like alcohol does influence like whether you do it or not. Or, like in my instance, like I feel like when I'm drunk, like I am in more of a mood for it. Like I feel like more comfortable in myself. Like I feel more comfortable with my body. Like when I'm sober, like I get like nervous and you think about like every detail and like, am I good enough? Am I not? Like I think just alcohol like gives me that like relief kind of.
And is that a positive thing for you then?
Yeah, it's a positive thing. Not when you're like overly drunk, but when you're drunk enough to feel comfortable.
Anyone else?
I go out a lot and most of the time I do have a few drinks when I'm out, and I do notice when I have a bit to drink, I'm a bit more, I don't want to say the word promiscuous, but I do a few things with a few men, you know, in the clubs and stuff. So I think when I normally do anyway, but when I drink, I'm just, but when I drink, it's just, like Charlotte said, it makes you feel a lot more comfortable to do things with people. So it really just kind of gets me going in a sense.
If we change our decision making under the influence, should we be having sex with anyone under influence?
No, you shouldn't be having sex with anyone under the influence if they've said no. If they've said yes, we'll play ball. It's still fair game. But are you also under the influence?
I think that it's, I've had times, I'm in a long-term relationship, and I've had times even when my partner has been drunk and I've said no, because I think that your ability to say no even is inhibited when you're under the influence of something. And I think it's just safer. I mean, it depends on the level, but you know when someone isn't capable of making a decision, and I think that even if you know the person really well and you know what maybe they would say when they're not under the influence, it's still safer to say no.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's that fine line between, you know, being tipsy and having fun and you and that person that you're having sex with being on a level, then you know, we all know when you look at somebody in the eyes, if they are to the other way, when do you, as that other person, say, but oh, we're having fun, we're in my bed, oh, do you know what I mean? And we all find ourselves in those situations. Dan?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if I would agree with that, actually, that we do always know if the other person is in that place or not. But also, in my mind, I'm thinking, is it... Sure, there's a moral responsibility if you know somebody isn't, able to consent because they're too inebriated. Then, yes, you have a moral responsibility to not go there. But it is not that person's responsibility for their drunkenness or for their intoxication. I guess it's such a grey area of consent, you know. In the discussions we're having there, it was almost as if the onus was put on the other person, I guess, to make the decision. And I guess we need to take responsibility for ourselves.
Yeah, I think we all do, don't we? You know you best, and you know when you're drunk, and you know when you can get down and do it, and when you absolutely cannot. After someone is drinking, it does become harder to convey consent to another person or to determine that a partner has consented to sex. That is true for a few reasons. Alcohol affects the ability to communicate clearly. People may be more likely to willingly disregard messages they are being sent if they're drinking. Alcohol can give people tunnel vision, which makes them more determined to get that one thing they're focused on. And alcohol can increase aggressiveness, which can be disastrous when it comes to sex. So we know a wee bit more about the kind of effects that alcohol can have us on us during sex, but we're hearing more and more about the use of drugs in sex, and in particular, as it's known nowadays, chemsex. Take a listen to this.
Stop.
Are you in London tomorrow?
Yeah.
I'm coming to your house tonight.
Who's boy?
Six boy. I'm taking alcohol, man.
And what else?
That's it.
And what else?
Methadone.
These days, you come into London to find your gay life, and you find Grindr. And within perhaps four conversations, you're going to be introduced to chems. Within eight conversations on Grindr, you're going to be introduced to injecting or slamming.
Originally, sex and drugs were two separate things. Somewhere along the line, you were no longer having sex without drugs, and you were no longer having drugs without sex.
Tina, TG, they all mean one thing. It's time to party.
The feelings that you get is like a firework display in your soul.
It looks to some people like greedy, self-indulgent, promiscuous gay boys going out having fun on drugs.
It's more complicated than that.
The gay scene can be such a lonely, alienating place.
The drugs gave me the confidence that I never had.
Vulnerable gay men with issues around sex. New drugs that tapped into that problem rather well. And changing technology. What they call it, the perfect storm.
Once you cross the line, and once you're in that world of chems and you're in that world of incredible sex, if you never come back across the line and see what else is there, it's very easy to stay in there.
Being diagnosed with HIV... So it happened after I'd OD'd on G.
Five gay men are being diagnosed with HIV every single day in London, just in London. And that's a huge number. There's something about our relationship to our sex that's causing harm and that needs addressing.
That was a trailer from the film Chemsex, a film by Vice, directed by William Fairman and Mac Gogarty. It's a Peccadillo Pictures release. Chemsex film, if you've not seen it, tells the stories of gay men whose lives have been affected by the crisis, from self-confessed slammers to sexual health workers, from those who deny there's a problem to those who got out alive. Chemsex is a brave and unflinching journey into the hidden modern world of urban gay life. It is an absolute epidemic here in the UK. Dan, tell us what is chemsex?
Well, Chemsex, by definition, basically refers to anybody using recreational drugs during sexual encounters. But, you know, in the context it's most commonly referred to presently, it's commonly associated with gay men using particular drugs, which would be GHB, crystal meth, or methadone. And what we're finding is that increasingly, gay men in particular could be up for days, you know, up all night partying, with numerous sexual partners. Yeah, this obviously starts to present a risk. You know, we spoke about inhibitions being lowered when we are intoxicated, for example. And yes, so inhibitions lowered, decision-making process is not what it should be. People making riskier choices.
And what if you feel like you have a problem with chemsex? Are there people out there that can help?
Yeah, there are. And there's actually a specialist support service at the Haversage Centre, which offers various forms of support to people who are struggling with chemsex issues. Yeah.
And that's anybody out there who thinks that they need to take drugs to have sex, or if they've found themselves in a position where they've taken drugs and had risky sex, which we're going to get on to in a minute. What are other things then that can contribute to sex being risky? And folks in the room, has any of this ever happened to you?
It wasn't me that wasn't sober, but I suppose it's an experience I have that kind of ties into chemsex. Because you get a lot on Grindr. A lot of people come forward to you and you ask about chemsex and things like that. But one time I was hooking up with a man, and I'd gone back to his and it was all... I had not mentioned any of this before. And, you know, we're kissing, we're kind of groping each other, that sort of stuff. And then he brings out this plastic bag and I ask what it is because I have no idea what it is. And he says, it's crystal meth. Can I take it? And I've never engaged in chemsex. I don't really want to. I think it's a horrible slippery slope that just ends in tragedy. I ended up leaving that hookup because the guy was really insistent on it. And that's just something I don't want to be around.
And could you tell, did he take it in front of you then? Did he take the crystal meth in front of you?
He didn't in the end, but he was, I think he was really just trying to push me to say yes, that he could, to try and get my consent in it.
What do you think would have happened had you have said yes?
I think he probably would have tried to pressure me to take it as well, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. Which, you know, goes down to the slippery slope thing that you were talking about there. Thank you for that. I hear you there calling it hookups and one-night stands, booty calls, no strings attached. What else do you call that form of sex, open forum? What do we call that?
Trade.
Okay, nice one. Anyone else?
Banging for roof.
What?
Banging for roof.
Banging for roof.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'll write that down. That's a new one for me.
Pleasant surprise.
A pleasant surprise. Yes, indeed. What else do we call it? No strings fun?
For me, a usual Sunday night.
Okay. Lovely. Anyone else? What do we refer to it as?
Making money.
Thank you, Kobe. All right then. So we're gonna hear a bit of music now. We're very, very excited to be playing this phenomenal female singer-songwriter here on the show today. It's Lucy Spraggan, and when we come back, we're gonna sort of talk about some of the themes that were raised in this track. It's called Beer Fear.
Last night I told you I loved you. Woke up, blamed it on the vodka. I genuinely thought I was dying, and I could see that smile you were hiding. Last night I told you I need you. That's the last time I drink tequila. Super lemon and this I kick soaking. I start crying and verbally assaulting. Last night I asked you to marry me. That's when I remembered the brandy. I wake up and claim I didn't say it. Screwed if I ever wake up in Vegas. Wish I could stop, and I'm not joking. Drinking too much and socially smoking. Wish I could stop, start to behave, and then wake up in the morning and never miss a day again. Last night I called you a loser. I think that was after flaming Zambuca. I shouted at you, do me a favor, and that's when I fell off the pavement. Wish I could stop, and I'm not joking. Drinking too much and socially smoking. Wish I could stop, start to behave, and then wake up in the morning and never miss a day again. Cause I'd love to learn when to shut my mouth. Wake up in the morning and be in my own house. Do one last shot and know when to stop. No more photos on Facebook of me doing the robot. Know when to leave and when to lock my front door. Stop waking up and cheesing in a bed full of people. Sitting in a cupboard with my weird best friend. But I'm only young, so I'm not gonna pretend. I wish I could stop, cause I'm not joking. I love drinking too much and socially smoking. stop or learn to behave, amen. And I hate just missing another day again.
That was Lucy Spraggan and her X Factor audition from way back in the day with her song Beer Fear. Give her a big round of applause, everyone. I'm going to throw this straight out to the room then. I want your hands in the air. Should sex be with the person you love, or is that an outdated concept? I want everyone to have an opinion on this. Let me know. Yes?
Yeah, it should be. I think that growing up, I was taught that sex should be something you do with one person unless you get divorced. So I don't know. I'm not judging anyone or their lifestyles, but personally, I just think sex should wait for marriage.
Love that. I love that that's your view. Well done. Love that.
I just think that it's a matter of who you feel safe with. I also grew up with, you know, people saying, oh, you should only sleep with someone that you love, you're going to get married to, whatever. But then I grew up and I realized that that was a lie and that, you know, I think you should just do whatever makes you feel good.
A member of the forum had mentioned that their opinion was sex should be with one person, they should wait for marriage. Now, with that, I respect your opinion. You can have that. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. But up until recently, I wasn't allowed to get married.
Okay, cool. Yep, the person beside you, straight in.
I think you can have sex with whoever you want with. I think it's too much moralization in it. And literally, if you've just met someone, that's fine. It's not hurting anyone. It's a great way to pass the time. That's what I think.
It's a great way to pass the time. I love that. Yep, that's your view. We're here for it. You know, there's lots of different mixture of views in the room. It's really good to see. But when it comes to one-night stands, what risks come into that? And how can we limit them? Because we've talked about having your own responsibility of your own actions, your own intake, your own intoxication, shall we say, in the positions that you find yourself in. But what risks can come up? Let's fire that one around the room.
I feel like if obviously you've just met them, obviously they could be like really dangerous. So like you need to like tell people like where you go and like where you're going to be. Like I would normally like just follow my friends and be like, oh, are you sure? Because I don't really know. You've just literally just met him. So it's obviously like a big risk, but if you want to do it, I guess.
Yeah, keep yourself safe online. Of course, we do put ourselves into these vulnerable positions where we invite strangers into our homes. I mean, that is literally what we're doing. We've got to be careful with that. Yep, anyone else?
Another risk of having a one-night stand could be unwanted pregnancy. If you're not careful with the way you protect yourself and, you could end up getting pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, we completely missed that one, didn't we? Babies! Nobody wants that when they don't want that, do you know what I mean? If you're just joining us, where the hell have you been? We're Gaydio, this is Open Forum. And we are talking about sex, if you haven't already guessed. And if you're likely to be offended by discussions of an adult nature, then you might have to come back in a short minute when we're over. Equally, if there's things that have been raised today where you think you might need some help, or if you just want a bit of support, or indeed if there's something that you've heard for the first time and you want to get a definition of that, please do go on to the LGBT Foundation. And there are plenty of numbers out there for you to go and get that help. We're nearly at the end of our Open Forum today, which is quite sad. We could talk about sex forever here on the show. We are going to have another performance night from Nathaniel Hall. Nathaniel has been sharing quite a lot with us today about his HIV diagnosis. The very first time he had sex, he contracted HIV, but he's turned that around and he's used it as, you've really empowered yourself with this, haven't you?
Yeah, the last two years have been incredible, really. I've kind of turned my life around everyone knows everything about my life now, pretty much. So there's no secrets.
So you are the writer of First Time. It's a one-man show. It's about staying positive in a negative world, and I love that mantra. What are you going to do for us now, though?
I'm going to do a little excerpt from the show, just a little bit of context. So this at this point in this story, and my family don't know that I'm HIV positive. And this is one of the moments, a real kind of turnaround moment for me in 2012, when I kind of realized that I survived.
Thank you. The piece is called Moment 13. Give it up, ladies and gents, for Nathaniel Hall.
August 2012, Manchester Pride. It's the Monday after the big weekend. The party is well and truly over. 5,000 people descend on Sackville Gardens to remember those people we've lost to HIV and AIDS. This year, they're going to hear my story. in the form of the letter I wrote to my 16-year-old self. I've been reading it to groups of people for a while now, and George House Trust asked me if I wanted to read it in the park tonight, but I can't because, well. But I said they could use the letter if we made it anonymous, so we changed my name and passed the letter to the director. I get a phone call. Hi Nathaniel, it's Adam Zane here. I'm directing the Candlelit Vigil at Pride again, and I've been given this gorgeous letter from this young gay lad who got HIV the first time he ever had sex. Thing is, he's not fully open about it yet, and we need an amazing actor to read it out on his behalf, and I immediately thought of you. I made some lame excuse about volunteering all weekend. At least he thought it was amazing, right? So, I'm at the front in the VIP section. It's Manchester, so of course, it's raining. A sea of umbrellas is forming behind me, hundreds upon hundreds, all here to listen to my story. The vigil starts. A few speeches from important people, then it's my turn. I'm up. A young man walks to the centre of the stage, and I instantly recognise him. Rob Ward, an actor I met while working for Adam Zane. Seriously, trying to stay in the HIV closet is hard. But I compose myself as he begins to read the letter. My letter. As he was reading the letter, I turned round and I saw groups of people holding one another. Some were crying quietly. One man was sobbing uncontrollably. That's when it hit me. I survived. So many queer men didn't. They died as outcasts, and people thought they deserved it simply because they loved another man. When Rob got to the part about the NHS and everything it's done for people like me, the crowd just went wild. 5,000 people celebrating our country's greatest achievement, celebrating their own personal Sue. And in that moment, I was reminded of pictures I've seen from the early AIDS wards. You know, a friend of mine who was there right at the height of the epidemic, he said guys on the wards used to give each other handjobs under the covers. Life finds a way. Love finds a way. By this point in the proceedings, I am a blubbering mess. Full on snot crying. But I compose myself just in time for the candles. The presenter takes to the mic. Now's the time to remember the 35 million people who've died from AIDS. Now is the time to stand in solidarity with the 37 million people who live with HIV. Now is the time to give thanks. Each and every day you wake, you survived. The crowd goes quiet, and a sea of candles burns brightly. Each of them for someone, somewhere.
Thank you, Nathaniel Hall. That was a piece called Moment 13 from his one-man show, First Time. And as we said before, if you do want to get tickets to go and see his show First Time, you can do that. You can get onto his website. Nathaniel, what's your website?
It is www.nathanieljhall.co.uk/first-time.
Folks, lots of themes coming up there. One thing that really stood out to me there was the NHS, something that we forget about when it comes to sexual health. We have so many drugs available to us here in the UK that protect us from STIs, pregnancy and HIV, etc. Ladies in the room then, you're lucky. You can have contraception, you can have the pill, you can have the coil and other different contraception methods out there, and it's available on the NHS. Is there anything that could be done, do you think, to sort of further that help and that healthcare that you get here in Manchester and in the country for free?
I would just say it was interesting that you said we're lucky, because absolutely we're lucky we have contraception, but oftentimes it doesn't feel very lucky that the burden is on us as women. I think more people should be aware of it, because...
And when you say people, sorry, do you mean straight men who you're having sex with, so the burden's a bit more on them?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think there should be more money put into research for male contraception, but that's going to be a long time off.
It's something you'd like.
Oh, you love. That out there. I would
any
love
other
that
women in the room? Would any other women in the room like that? Any other guys in the room? Any of our... If a male contraception was available, would you take it?
Probably not. Because I'd be like, I've got health anxiety as well. So it's like, I get worried easy. So
there are women in the room who say that they feel the same. So, okay. In summary then, if you are, have you got a girlfriend, by the way?
Yeah, I've got a girlfriend.
So if you've got a girlfriend and it's between you or her to take the pill that's on the table. Okay. Who's going to put their hand on it first and why?
Probably my girlfriend, because obviously like, I feel like with females, like I was saying before, like they feel like they have to take ownership of everything. So like, I feel like she'll do that automatically anyways,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to the female in the room then and find out what she has to say about that.
I really like you, Destino, but I disagree with everything. I think your girlfriend probably is going to go for it because she's always had to and you've never had to. But it's not fair that just because we will be the ones that will have to carry the child, that we should be the only ones that have to stop, you know, prevent it.
You've got a boyfriend as well. If this new drug came out that you could, you know, prevent risky sex and you might not have to have all of the horrible side effects that come with taking your contraception, do you think that your partner would do that for you? Would he take the pill?
I personally think he would, because, number one, I'm terrible at taking my pill. I've been on the pill for... Since I was 16, I first went on because it is a really good preventive for heavy periods. So that's why I went on so early. And I still haven't got into the hang of it. I'm terrible at it. It comes with horrible side effects. So I think because he's always known me to be on the pill and to have these horrible side effects, I'd like to think at least he would maybe say, okay, you've done your bit. Let's see how it would work. Okay. Swapped around.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, then back to you then. So you've heard what the ladies have had to say.
No, I fully agree with them, yeah. Like, I fully agree with them. Like, if they put the tablet in the middle and we both had to take it, I would take it because obviously, like, you said it shouldn't just be the female that has to feel, like, responsible for it. So I would definitely take it, yeah.
Okay, cool. Interesting. Nice that you're able to take that on board and hear what the ladies have to say. But I understand it. You know, it's just that thing. You know, when since you're growing up, the woman carries the baby. She doesn't want to carry the baby. She takes the pill. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of nods in the room. Finally then, let's go back to you then, Dan. Thanks for sticking around. If anybody who's been listening has been affected by any of these issues on Open Forum this week, how can we get help?
Yeah, there have been a lot of topics raised related to sex today. Various organisations can help with this. The LGBT Foundation is a great organisation for lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans. You've got the Hathersage Centre of Sexual Health. You know, if you've got concerns about your about a sexual infection or chemsex or anything really related to sex, go there. And if they can't support you, they will be able to signpost. And Brooke as well, someone mentioned before, is an organisation that supports with this stuff.
Can we all say a big thank you to Dan for sticking around and giving his professional opinion today? That's almost all we've got time for here today at Open Forum. Thank you for sticking with us. If you want to follow us, you can, of course, do that at Gadio and at Reform Radio MCR. Please do follow our sponsors who've made all this happen at Audio Fund. We're going to be back for our next installment of Open Forum, which is all about home. What does home mean to you? Please do come and join us for that. If you miss anything that we've done here today on the show, you can get onto our website, gaydio.co.uk. And that's almost it from me. I've been Dean McCulloch. And if I had to give a piece of advice,